We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It is a Sports Saturday. It's Steve, Eric, Jonathan hanging out. Wolves tonight on the radio. Wolves cast with John Folkey at 6. Pregame 6:30. Tip 7:10, Allen Horton, New Orleans in town. Rare home back-to-back. They got beat by the Mavs 119-115 on Friday night. Interim head coach Ryan Saunders' home debut. Of course, he won his debut on the road at Oklahoma City earlier in the week. Thrilling victory, but they get beat by the Mavs. The final 119-115. And Luka Doncic was the man for the Mavs, scoring 29, including a dagger three late.
Down by one, shot clock to 18. Doncic, a pull-up three straight away, and he hit it! Good heavens! Luka Doncic, 29 points, 8 rebounds, 12 assists. He strokes a deep three and puts the Mavericks up by two.
It is the first time I've seen Doncic play in person, and I was impressed. 29 points, 12 assists. He had 8 rebounds in the game, 2 steals, and just 1 turnover in the game last night, and was money down the stretch. We led the Howland Show talking about Doncic. And by the way, Eric's got a howl-in tonight following the Wolves and the Pelicans with John Folkey and Allen Horton. But I'll tell you what, Eric, this guy, 19 years old, he is the real deal.
Yeah, they're ecstatic down in Dallas that they have this guy moving forward. The transition from Dirk Nowitzki, the future Hall of Famer, to Luka Doncic and the Mavericks, who have the exact same record now as Minnesota, 20-22. They're a team, they believe they're going to keep getting better. What has to be concerning for the Timberwolves, DVT, is Dallas got a rare road win. The Mavericks are now 4-18 away from the Metroplex. That's the worst home record in the West and second worst in the NBA. So for Minnesota to give up that game at Target Center, sellout crowd, you were there, you were part of the vibe. That's concerning because it gives you a flashback to what happened a few weeks ago against Atlanta. Now, these are the kind of losses that if you're going to be a playoff team, you avoid these kind of losses. Now, you know, Doncic was unbelievable, no doubt about it, but you somehow have to find a way to win it, and they did not.
Yeah, and the Wolves early on got into a funk and just couldn't buy one. I remember at one point they're 1-10 from outside the arc. Their shooting percentage overall from the field was in the 30s. Just not good numbers. They climbed back into the game, but Doncic down the stretch was the difference. Karl-Anthony Towns, rock solid again, 30 points. He had 11 total rebounds in the game last night. But Cat was on the bench, had foul trouble. Andrew Wiggins, who had the huge night against Oklahoma City earlier in the week, struggled 7-17 from the field in the game. Another tough night for Dario Saric. He was 0-5 from the field, 0-3 outside the arc. And late in the game with the Wolves down by 2, he had an open look from the right wing, passed it up, gave it to Derrick Rose at the top for an open 3. He passed. They get it inside, ultimately turn it over. And the Mavericks up by 2, go on to win it by 4, 119-115. And that is certainly one that got away. Now they turn the page, quick turnaround, back-to-back, good news at home. Bad news is Karl-Anthony Towns got banged up a little bit, and it'll be very interesting to see if Cat's available tonight.
Yeah, and they're going to need him because this New Orleans team, just like Dallas, 20-22, just like Minnesota. So the Mavericks, the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, right now on the outside looking in at the NBA's playoff picture, again, 1-8 goes to the postseason. Everybody else goes home. So these are teams that are trying to, you know, bypass each other and get into the playoff picture. This is a big game for both teams. And the Pelicans have won four of their last five. And that hot streak began on New Year's Eve down there in New Orleans when they knocked off Minnesota 123-114, minus Anthony Davis, who had an illness that game. He didn't play. I remember I was in for Al Malmberg that night, and we talked a lot about that outcome, which was certainly disappointing for Minnesota to get a chance to play New Orleans minus Davis, and you can't get it done. So now Davis is back, and I think you're going to see a scrappy game tonight. Minnesota has to be embarrassed that you can't beat Dallas at home. Certainly there was a sugar high from the win over Oklahoma City in Ryan Saunders' first game as the interim head coach. Andrew Wiggins blew up. Then you come back. You have a chance to build on it. Remember, they had a three-game winning streak going into the game last night. Could have been four. Now you're starting over again. I think both these teams are going to come out, and it's going to be a dogfight tonight because all you have to do is look at the standings. The Pelicans and the Timberwolves are tied. You know, they got to keep moving up the ladder.
So we're not sure about Cat and his availability tonight. He has an Iron Man streak that is on the line. I'm sure it's going to take a lot to keep Karl Anthony Towns out of the lineup. And then ultimately the availability of Derrick Rose as well, because they're concerned about minutes for Rose. And he had 27 minutes and 30 seconds, and he was great again. 21 points on 8 of 16 shooting, 3 of 5 from the arc. Maybe the only criticism, passing up that open 3 late in the game. You'd love to have Šarić or Rose pull the trigger on that down by 2 late in the game and be able to hit that shot. But the Wolves, once again, without Rose, and of course Rob Covington is banged up and will not be available for play tonight. There is no timetable for his return.
And he's been out for a while, so yep. I think the Timberwolves are learning that we're going to have to live without Robert Covington for the near future. I don't know when he's going to come back. And you look at that game last night as well. J.J. Barea, he's still hanging around. It seems like whenever he comes back to Target Center, he's a burr under the saddle of the Timberwolves. He had 16 points, and Dwight Powell had 15. And I think Dwight Powell had like 5 dunks. I mean, he was taking that rock to the rack and slamming it down. So they need, maybe you got to get a little bit better defensively down there in the paint. But the beauty of it is, you know, you lose a game like last night, you can't dwell on it. You can't mope. You got to play tonight. You got to be ready to go because here comes the unibrow, Anthony Davis, and historically, he has lit up Minnesota statistically.
Yeah, and you bring up J.J. Barea. He got banged up late in the game and walked off very gingerly and didn't return to the Mavericks. One other tidbit you brought up, Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk, a shell of him, his former self, coming off the bench, 13 minutes plus, 0-for-4, all of those outside the arc, and a couple of those missed badly. And Dirk Nowitzki playing out the string, it is kind of sad. What he once was to where he is today, I get the sense he hung around a year too long.
Yeah, and I think Mark Cuban has such a fondness for Dirk Nowitzki and what he's meant for the Mavericks franchise. He was the centerpiece of their only NBA championship in franchise history a few years ago when they knocked off the Miami Heat. And Shaq, I believe, was with Miami then, and Dwayne Wade. So I think you're right, though, because when I think about Dirk Nowitzki in his prime, I remember those mano-a-mano matchups with KG, Kevin Garnett, when they would, you know, both get into these duels, and you know Dirk would have the turnaround fadeaway, and KG would be going right back at him at the other end. But it's a much different story now. He will leave probably after this season. Next stop, Springfield, Mass. Basketball Hall of Fame. What a career he's had.
Yeah, and I would think it's got to be the end of the line based on what I saw at Target Center last night.
He's hobbling
out there. He just can't move anymore. And for a big man to do what he did in his career is extraordinary. And he is one of these guys that made it okay for big men to stretch at D and go on the perimeter and make the three. When you think about Dirk Nowitzki, it's not so much a play down on the post. It is his play on the perimeter that I believe made him really stand out.
No, I agree. I mean, he had the ability to hit that jump shot from, you know, 17, 18 feet away. a very agile guy, even though he was a big guy, and he could move up and down the floor in his prime. And the Mavericks had some very good teams. Again, they won an NBA championship. I think some people forget the Dallas Mavericks have a title, and that's something the Minnesota Timberwolves don't have. So you got to give Dirk a lot of credit, but he is not what he used to be. And obviously a great love and a passion for the game, doesn't want to walk away. But, you know, the Mavericks may have to pull him in a room and say, you know what, Dirk, why don't you go away and you'll have your moment in time, and pretty soon we'll have a statue of you down there at the arena in Dallas, and let it go from there. But I think circling back to the game tonight, though, Stevie T, again, you look at the standings in the Western Conference. Right now the Lakers are the 8th seed. Utah is 9. They're a game back. Sacramento's a game and a half back. And then New Orleans, Dallas, and Minnesota are all 2.5 behind the L.A. Lakers. Memphis is 3. So we continue to see a scrum in the West, and the Timberwolves, with a win tonight, can at least get past New Orleans and maybe some other teams. But if they lose, suddenly there's a potential they drop all the way down to the number 14 seed in the West.
Wolves and Pelicans tonight. Coverage begins at 6. Once again, John Folkey and our Wolves cast at 6:30. The pregame show, Alan Horton with all the play-by-play at 7:10. And then Eric, John, and Alan with our Howland show all the way up until 11 o'clock. And then tomorrow, more Wolves coverage on the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Magsy between 9:30 and noon. And then I'll be in with Timberwolves Week and review it tomorrow at 5 here on CCO. Wolves hit the road. They'll be in Philly on Tuesday and then return home next Friday night to take on the San Antonio Spurs. It is 4:20. We'll talk Wild hockey coming up in a moment. It is a Sports Saturday. Steve, Eric, Jonathan hanging out. Wolves and Pelicans tonight, a rare home back-to-back for the Wolves tonight. They got beat by the Mavs 119-115 on Friday night. The Wild are home. They've got a lot of action coming up. Kind of a weird stretch for the Wild. They've dominated the Canadian teams as of late. They get the Red Wings tonight. That's almost Canada. And then they go to Philly, come home to play the struggling LA Kings on Tuesday, and then they get the really struggling Anaheim Ducks on Thursday. So a lot of action coming up for the Wild, and the roller coaster ride continues. You really never know what you're going to get with this team.
No, they're the Forrest Gumps of hockey. I mean, you really don't. And just when we all wanted to bury them, they rose from the grave. And it took the Canadian trip to do it. I think about the win in Toronto early this month. And that was a huge victory because the Maple Leafs are one of the top teams in the NHL. And then they get a victory in Ottawa, one more in Montreal. They did fall on their face at Boston.
Yeah, they were blown out of the building.
They came back to the States, and of course, maybe it was customs, I don't know. But that was a reality check. But they beat a Canadian team the other night, Winnipeg. We know how good the Jets are.
They've owned Winnipeg this year.
Isn't that funny? Because Winnipeg right now, I mean, if you look at the standings, 58 points. Winnipeg is easily, along with Nashville, the top teams in the Central Division. So the Wild, give them credit. And now they get Detroit, and the Red Wings are going to limp into town. They've only got 39 points. And by the way, the Red Wings lost at Winnipeg last night, 4-2. So Detroit has lost 3 in a row, 9 of 10. Minnesota's won 5 of 7. The special teams for the Wild is getting better. They're doing a lot of things in this hot streak that they weren't doing in the cold streak, and thus the results are much more positive. Dare I say it, this should be a 2-point regulation win if you go by what it looks like on paper. But as we all know, paper doesn't mean squat once they drop the puck.
Well, and they have games in hand. They have a game in hand on Colorado, who they trail right now by a point. Colorado, the number one wild card. And then in the division, they have two games in hand against Dallas. They're 3 points ahead. So there is an opportunity here for the Wild, but when they were on that bad stretch, their margin for error went away. Now we're moving into the middle of January, and it goes quick, Eric. You know how it goes. And it's so hard in the NHL to make up ground when you fall behind big time on points. Right now, once again, the Wild have 47 points. You brought up Winnipeg and Nashville with 58. It will take an incredible run for the Wild to be able to reel in those teams. You just can't make up ground like that. So the idea that they can get into the top three, sure, they could run down Dallas. They could run down Colorado. But now the Wild are in a spot where they can't afford a 2-3-4-game stretch where they go with no points.
I think what they've been able to do in this stretch where they've gotten hot is they've won games in regulation. They've come away with two-point victories, didn't have to go to overtime. I think tonight is another golden opportunity. You have a bad Detroit team in here, and they played last night in Winnipeg, so they traveled, probably got in, you know, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., whatever. It's an opportunity. You need to take advantage, jump on them early. And then you have the L.A. Kings, who are not the L.A. Kings that we saw a few years ago when they won a couple of cups.
Oh, they're brutal.
Yeah, they're the worst team in the West. So that's another very winnable game in regulation.
Points-wise, worst team in the league right now at 37.
Well,
Philly's at 38.
And they let go of Daryl Sutter about a year and a half ago, and he was the guy who was the head coach when they won the two cups, and they're already on another coach after Sutter. But I think, you know, I'm amazed at how little respect in all of these sports, but especially the NHL. I mean, Joel Quenneville and Daryl Sutter, between them, have five cups, and they're both out. You know, Chicago let go of Quenneville earlier, and now Sutter is long gone with the L.A. Kings. Loyalty only goes so far.
Yeah, and for the Wild, you know, it's one of those things where this is the team they've been, and I really feel like this is going to go down to the final week of the regular season, whether or not the Wild get in or get out. And that's because the elephant in the room is they have a game-changing player. They don't have that elite scoring. And if they get good goaltending, if they play a tight defensive game, if they mind their P's and Q's, if you will, they can be a playoff team. But as I pointed out a moment ago, there's just no margin for error for this team. They need to play their game. They need to play it well if they're going to have an opportunity to get into the playoffs. And then beyond that, you know, do they have the frontline talent? Do they have the top-end talent to ultimately compete? And right now, the answer for me is no.
Yeah.
That they're a borderline playoff team.
Well, and you brought up firepower or lack thereof. I mean, right now, Zach Parise and Mikael Granlund are their two guys leading in points with 39 each. Parise, 19 goals, leads the team. But they don't have that explosiveness that you see with some of the other teams in the NHL. And this isn't so much about getting to the playoffs. Look, the Wild have done a good job of getting into the postseason, whether it be, you know, Mike Yeo or Bruce Boudreau, whoever the head coach is. It's about advancing. And they've gotten into the second round a couple of times in recent memory, but that's it. And they need a run. And I think, you know, what you're getting at is you can't imagine this team as it's currently constructed going on a deep run in the NHL playoffs. It's hard for me to visualize that as well. The first and foremost, you got to get in, but I just don't think they're an elite team.
Well, and here's the thing about the Wild, though, and from their perspective, they fill the building. They've given the team playoff appearances. They're always hopeful, but I just think as they're structured, you just get back to that simple fact that there's just no margin for error. And what are they going to do at the trade deadline? Is Paul Fenton, new general manager, going to say, hey, we are what we are, and if we're going to be able to get better in the future, 2019-2020 season, you know, as you look down the road, you know, are they going to need to make a deal? Are they going to need to make players available at the trade deadline that may in the short term not be all that popular, like a trade of a Charlie Coyle or someone else, if there is a market for those guys, with the idea that they have to be able to get younger. They need an infusion of younger talent. They need to try and catch lightning in a bottle and find an elite scorer somewhere. Now, they don't grow on trees. They're not readily available. But, you know, the Wild are in that spot where they just don't have that talent where you can where the guy brings you to the edge of your seat, like a Marion Gaborik did once upon a time. That's something that, once again, not every team in the NHL does, but I think it's imperative if they're going to take that next step and be able to get on a deep playoff run, they need to get there.
Yeah, and really, if you look at the history of the Minnesota Wild franchise, which dates back to the year Y2K, 2000, I don't think they've really ever had that true superstar who puts people in the building, say when they travel. As you said, that's not a problem here in the state of hockey. They fill up the XL Energy Center. Those people all wear their sweaters. They come in. They drink the Kool-Aid. But this is not a team that moves the needle around the nation or maybe even in Canada. And I say that because it's still hard for me to believe Minnesota has never had a Winter Classic game yet, a New Year's game. We've had the Stadium Series, that Chicago game a couple of years ago at TCF. That was a lot of fun. I was there. They won. The snowflakes were falling. The Dallas Stars, for goodness sakes, are going to host that thing next year at the Cotton Bowl. So NBC and the NHL, when they think of Minnesota, and here's the perfect state to have an outdoor game in, right? I mean, the conditions usually are perfect. We still haven't had that. It tells me that this is just a middle-rung franchise in the eyes of NBC and the NHL.
Well, and I think the All-Star game, you know, say what you want about it, Devan Dubnyk, who has had a very topsy-turvy year for the Wild, he was red hot early, really cooled off. He's the lone All-Star representative. I mean, I think that speaks volumes as well. Once again, we love our team. They fill it up. You know, they get 18, 19,000 in there, morning, noon, and night. Doesn't matter when you play. Matinees, late games for television, whatever. People show up over in St. Paul. It's a great atmosphere. But you're right. I think the fact that you haven't seen a Winter Classic and the fact that Devan Dubnyk is their lone All-Star representative, you know, speaks volumes.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, when they signed Zach Parise and Ryan Suter a few years ago on the 4th of July, they had those fireworks in the middle of the offseason. You know, I was excited. I think you were excited. A lot of the fans were. It was legitimate. But since then, how many All-Star games for Parise? How many for Suter? And the kind of money Craig Leopold forked out for those guys, you know, when you're paying that much, you expect all-star-like results, and they just haven't gotten it. And, you know, so where are they right now? They're a team right there in the mix, just trying to get into the postseason and make up some ground from digging a hole a while ago. That's what happens when you dig a hole. You got to dig out.
And for the Wild, you can sum it up, the late Dennis Green. They are what we thought they are or thought they were or whatever. 4:34, we'll have the weather in a moment. 4:38 here at CCO. Steve, Eric, Jonathan hanging out. Wolves on the radio tonight. Pelicans in town. Our coverage at 6. Wolves cast with John Folkey, Alan Horton with the play-by-play at 7:10. Then Eric, Alan, and John with a Howland show tonight following the game all the way up until 11 o'clock. And Kansas City leading Indianapolis 17-0. It looks like the Colts finally on the board late second quarter at Arrowhead, but Kansas City was dominating.
Blocked punt return right at the goal line that was covered by the Colts for a touchdown.
Wow, special teams.
And the guy came
straight
up the
gut.
Right up the middle, unblocked.
Yeah, now cut to the shot of the special teams coach. That's
I mean,
NBC's
what's Mike
job.
Prefer doing? No, I'm kidding. I mean, he came right up the middle untouched to block that kick. How does that happen?
And you know what? It's a lost art in today's NFL. And there's the chief special teams coach. I knew they were going to cut to that shot. He's not a happy camper.
Dave Taub is his name.
Yeah.
Dave Taub.
Dave is
and
not happy.
And he's on the hot seat.
Andy Reid will soon be whispering in his ear. Yeah. It won't be about dinner tonight.
Yeah. So. Hey, it's a chilly day in Kansas City, and they're warming up the hot seat for the special teams coordinator down there. But did you like that? I got the Mike Prefer shot in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike has already put the Twin Cities in his rearview mirror. He's off to C-Town, baby.
He's on. Well, they got a quarterback in Cleveland.
They got a quarterback, and you know what? They were pretty good this past season by Brown standards.
Yeah, a couple other things I wanted to get to a little bit off the beaten path. A tearful Andy Murray says the Australian Open, the first Grand Slam tennis event, could be his last tournament because of the hip injury that's derailed his career. The 31-year-old Murray said he trained in the offseason with the main goal of making one last run at Wimbledon, where he ended the 77-year-old drought for British men, but now he wasn't sure he'd make it. Friday, in an emotional news conference at Melbourne Park, when he had to leave the room shortly after his first attempt to get it started, he needed to pause several times to compose himself after returning. Murray said he wasn't sure how much longer he could play. And you think about the state of men's tennis right now, you have Novak Djokovic, you have Andy Murray, you have Rafael Nadal, and of course the great Roger Federer, who's won more Grand Slams than any other man in the history of the game. And here's Murray at 31 years old. He can't get his hip right. And when I saw this story on Friday, Eric, I was thinking about another all-time great athlete, Bo Jackson. Isn't a hip is what
absolutely
derailed Bo?
When you said hip, that's exactly what came into my mind.
Wow.
Bo blew it out on a jet sweep against Cincinnati when he was running for the L.A. Raiders many years ago. And, you know, he did try to come back. He even played baseball as well, but was really never the same. And, boy, 31 years old, Andy Murray, a former world number one. You know, I know tennis, maybe that's a little bit on the high end age-wise, but still, you hate to see a guy at that stage, you know, probably done. Three Grand Slam titles, Wimbledon in 2013 and 2016, U.S. Open in 2012, a couple of Olympic gold medals. On the flip side, if this is it, he's had a great run. And from all accounts, I guess everything over there in Australia at the Australian Open, his peers speak glowingly of him, his talent, and his heart that he brought to the court.
Yeah, it's just absolutely extraordinary, though. You would think in this day and age, with all the orthopedic specialists that are available to these world-class athletes, that he just wasn't able to get that right or get it figured out to the point where he could recover. And I've talked to David Wheaton a number of times, one of the all-time greats to ever come out of the state of Minnesota in the game of tennis, played in all the Grand Slams. It's an incredible grind. The tennis tour, as much as anything, these guys and women are literally all over the world, on planes all the time, trying to train, trying to practice, and so on and so forth. But you would think someone who has access, I mean, if he wanted to go to the Mayo Clinic, Andy Murray's going to the Mayo Clinic, wherever he wants to go in the world, and to think that, you know, this hip, he's not going to be able to get it right and not be able to continue to play is really a shame.
Well, and apparently he's had these issues much of his career, but they really started to crop up in 2017 at the French Open. And, well, you think about just walking if you have hip issues or running. Oh. Imagine tennis where it's, you know, you're going east and west, north and south, cutting, planting. I mean, without your hip, you're toast.
That's what I was going to bring up here is that you look at those four contemporaries that you just mentioned, Murray, Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal. Nadal is a year older than Djokovic and Murray. Federer is 37. Federer is 6 years older than Andy Murray. He's still rolling strong, and it might have just been the wrong part of the body to go because Rafael Nadal has had knee issues,
multiple knee issues,
and knee surgeries throughout his career. Novak Djokovic has had issues with his elbow and I believe also with his back during the course of his career.
Yeah, and he went into that funk where he couldn't win at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the two places where I would think you would really have issues playing either tennis or golf would probably be your back and your hip. because you have so much torque, because right. especially in tennis, you're planting, as Eric said, you're planting, you're cutting, you're stopping yourself on a dime. Having those hips available and flexible to you is going to be important. And so it's extremely sad to see this because, as both of you have said, Andy Murray might be the best gentleman. And all four of these guys that are at the top of the men's game right now, they've been told that they've been said to be quite nice men off the court. But Murray might be the nicest of them all.
Yeah.
And so to see this happen, he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt. He's got, like you said, three majors, two Olympic medals, two Olympic gold medals. I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame in the next few years. But there was promise of doing more. And it stinks that it has to be taken away by this type of injury.
Just a shame. And you bring up athletes and injuries. Tiger Woods hasn't played yet this calendar year. They're at the Sony Open in Honolulu. There was a Century Tournament of Champions a week ago. Tiger, traditionally, you'll tee it up somewhere in California, typically Torrey Pines, and that's coming up. It'll be very interesting to see how Tiger Woods follows up, which was an amazing comeback in 2018, one of the great comebacks in sports in 2018. How he follows that up in 2019, because we all know what Tiger went through with his back injury, and I think the sporting world is waiting to see what Tiger has in store in 2019.
Yeah, and I think J-Lo brought up a good point. Look, knee injuries, you can blow out a knee these days. We saw Adrian Peterson do it. He shredded his knee in a game late in the season. Everybody thought he was done.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Following year, he's the MVP. Teddy Bridgewater has come back. Those are two local examples. So if you hear about a guy blowing out his knee nowadays, yeah, you feel bad for the person, but it's generally assumed they'll be back and maybe better than ever. With the hip, we all go back to Bo Jackson. You talked about the back. I thought about Tiger Woods immediately. The back can shut you down. I go back to the old days. Larry Bird's back was so bad that when he checked in, he had to lay down on his stomach in front of the scorer's table
until
he was ready to, go in and actually play. So I think the back and the hip are different than the knee. Now, in baseball, the one thing that'll sit you down for a year is Tommy John. But you do come back from it, right?
That's what I was you've led me right into my point. 50 years ago, an elbow injury, especially to a baseball pitcher, was a death knell for the career. 30 years ago, a knee injury to a running back.
Yeah, Gale Sayers. He may have come back if he played today.
What,
yes.
What about Tony Oliva and his
Tony
knees?
Yes. Those used to be big-time injuries where you never came
back.
Those two have been basically, I don't want to say that it's solved, but it's much better nowadays. We haven't had a ton of people, sports athletes, with back or hip injuries to the point where it's debilitating. Maybe it's going to take some time for it to get to that point, but it stinks that it's not at that point already for a guy like Andy Murray, where he can come back and resume his career the way that he would like to.
Heck, he might even get knighted over there in the UK.
Oh, I mean, I would think so.
From a tennis standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, and he broke that long drought at Wimbledon. So, yeah, I would think he'll be Sir Andy Murray at some point. 4:48, 12 minutes now in front of five. Twins took care of some business and signed some players. We'll get into that in a moment. All the news at 5, Eric goes solo. We got the Wolves and the Pelicans from Target Center tonight. Our coverage begins at 6 here on the CCO. It is a sports Saturday. Steve, Eric, Jonathan hanging out. E, what do you got coming up between 5 and 6?
Yes, DVT. We'll talk to Marcus Fuller from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He covers that Gopher men's basketball team. We'll get his takeaways on today's win over Rutgers and the
big
amazing
win.
Career Jordan Murphy has had. Number 4 now, Big Ten history, all-time rebounding. And at 5:35, I'm going to visit with Dale Hansen, who's a TV anchor in Dallas at WFAA. He made some national news this week when he gave a piece on the air about white privilege in the NFL regarding head coaching positions. Dale's an interesting guy. He's had a long career in the business. Once upon a time, he was a Dallas Cowboys radio analyst with Brad Sham, who still does the games. We'll also talk Cowboys-Rams, but he's opinionated and brings up, I think, some very good points.
8 minutes now in front of five here at CCO. Twins got some business done. Right-hander Kyle Gibson, left fielder Eddie Rosario are among eight Twins who avoided salary arbitration by agreeing to one-year contract. Gibson was really good in 2018, and Rosario as well got big bumps. Gibson will earn 8.125, a big jump of 4.2 from 2018, so he almost doubled his money. And Rosario receives just over $4 million, and that's a huge jump as well from $602,000 a year ago. So the Twins getting thing tidied up. And the winter caravan, end of the month, Twins Fest, and then pitchers and catchers report down in Fort Myers. The thought is that the Twins still need to make a move or two and add pitching.
Well, and that still could happen. Remember, there was late movement in the free agent market last season where we saw the Twins get, Jake Odorizzi came via trade, but they brought Lance Lynn in late, signed him. That didn't work out that well. But my point is that, yes, there's still time for moves to be made. And also the Minnesota Twins made some news earlier this week. They're going to have a new backdrop at Target Field, a new hitter's eye.
A living hitter's eye.
Exactly. It's going to be very green, very ecological, earth-friendly, all that good stuff. So
that is good.
That'll be unveiled, obviously, before March 28th. That's the season opener, March 28th against Cleveland. Hopefully there won't be snow on the junipers
in
center field.
Making huge improvements to the Gate 34 area, the Target Field Plaza area. And when I went over to the Timberwolves game, I kind of walk around the building and head in on the Target Field side because that's where the media entrance is and easiest way into the building. And they're at work. They had the Mortensen barriers up, and they're really going to work on that Target Plaza area. So that'll be really cool to see come home opener time.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. And I've always loved Target Plaza and that, it's basically the link between Target Field and Target Center, so it'll be even better. And then the Twins made the announcement also this week that on Saturday, June 15th, that's Kansas City and Minnesota. That'll be a 6-10 game. Maybe you and I will be out there if we're fortunate enough, Stevie T. They're going to retire Joe Mauer's uniform number 7. That's the official ceremony. We know the number has been retired. But so just remember, Saturday, June 15th, they will salute number 7 out there at trendy Target Field.
Might I say, in a half-joking way, it's nice of the Twins to have the ceremony for Joe Mauer's number on a night when they host a team that he toasted during his entire career. Yeah, he toasted the Royals the entirety of his career. I'm just saying. It's not because I'm from around there or anything. I'm just saying. It's nice of the Twins to do that. Just sort of stick the needle in a little bit more.
It should be a great night at Target Field. By the way, Kansas City hammering the Indianapolis Colts 24-7 right now. The Colts get a special teams touchdown. The Colts have not been able to stop Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs at all.
No, and I think the story bigger than that, Kansas City's defense has basically shut out Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts.
They don't have
a
first down yet.
The touchdown was off the block punt. No first downs. That's got to be the best half of football the Chiefs' defense has played. Do they have two more quarters left?
Well, 9 plays and out.
Wow.
It's been 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out for the Colts on offense in the first half.
And then they let the Colts defensive player come up the middle, block a punt, they get a touchdown. Other than that, it has been total domination by Kansas City. It's been extraordinary.
J-Lo's a little bit more calm, but he's still got 30 minutes of football.
Last year against Tennessee. Don't let it happen. Don't let it happen.
You'll get there. You'll get there. Remember, Eric picked the Colts. I was with you that Kansas City would win today. All right, I got to run. We've got the news and weather at 5. Eric Osolo, Wolves, Pelicans tonight on the radio. They're on the CCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.